Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Jane Lynch worked hard and fretted hard before she made it big. The actress and comedian hawked jewelry overnight on a home shopping network, kicked a bad drinking habit, and acted her heart out on stage and screen before landing in the role of Sue Sylvester, the delightfully snarky head-leading cheerleading coach on the hit TV show Glee, who threatens William McKinley High School Glee Club director Will Schuster with relish.
I will go to the animal shelter and get you a kitty cat. I will let you fall in love with that kitty cat. And then on some dark, cold night, I will steal away into your home and punch you in the face.
Yeah, that's all. At 51, Jane Lynch has made it, hosted the Emmys Sunday night, and was a nominee, too. She's out with a new memoir, Happy Accidents. This hour on Point, comedian, actress, and Glee star, Jane Lynch. You can join the conversation. What is it about Jane Lynch? What's the signature flavor she brings to her roles in film and television? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here she was, Sunday night, big opening number. Television is a vast wonderland for the 63rd Emmy Awards.
Reading is stupid. Exercise hurts me. Thinking's a pain.
Talk about a big number. You can hear it right there. She made light of her status as a prominent lesbian entertainer.
You know, everyone was asking me if I had a gay agenda. And actually, I do. Call Rachel Maddow and find out what time spinning is. Take the pickup in for an oil change. Now I'll do it myself. And there was a third thing, but I must have left it in my fanny pack.
Jane Lynch at the Emmys and here at Glee, shouting encouragement to her national champion cheerleading team through a bullhorn.
You think this is hard? I'm passing a gallstone as we speak. That's hard.
Jane Lynch joins us from New York, Emmy and Golden Globe winner for her work in Glee. She had breakout parts in Best in Show and A Mighty Wind, both directed by Christopher Guest, and in The 40-Year-Old Virgin and Talladega Nights, produced by Judd Apatow. She's been Charlie Sheen's therapist on Two and a Half Men and appeared in many other TV shows, from L.A. Law and The West Wing to The L Word and Boston Legal. She's married to Dr. Laura Embry and has been a high-profile gay rights supporter. Season 3 of Glee premieres tonight on Fox. Her new memoir is Happy Accidents. Jane Lynch, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Did you have fun at the Emmys, or was it like, oh my God, this is a big spotlight?
I think the stress and the tension occurred for me, probably the weeks prior. But the last week, right before the Emmys, was one of the best, most exciting, most creative weeks of my life. I had the best time. And, I mean, I was nervous, believe me, when I finally hit the stage. But I was confident in the writing, and I was so happy.
Mark Burnett, who's the guy behind Survivor and so much reality TV, was, I don't know what you call it, the producer, director, the director, anyway. Head honcho of the show. Could you feel that you had a reality TV guy in the sidecar with you there or on the bullhorn?
I had the best producer on the planet is what I had and the greatest people around him. And he lived to serve the show, and he was magnificent.
And what a show, a big show, and many, many hours and elements there. You had a lot to keep your hands on. What did you think of the audience there that night? They were having fun. You were having fun with them.
They were. And, you know, they were extremely supportive. They laughed at all the jokes, right? Especially right off the top, you know, when you just really need them to be on your side. And it was an extremely supportive audience. And the night was wonderful. There was so much that happened in this show that was so lovely and affirming and makes me very proud to be a part of this television family.
Aren't you busy enough with Glee and Emmy Awards hosting and everything else? I mean, a memoir on top of that. What gave you the gumption to sit down and write this, Jane?
Well, it, like the title of my book says, it was a happy accident. I've written several speeches for gay rights organizations, and they always end up being rather personal because it's just how I roll. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine introduced me to an, a literary agent who said, you should write a book. And then before you know it, Hyperion said, we'll take your book. And so they gave me 4 months to write it. I dithered away one of the months, and then I got to work on it. I wrote it in 3 months with my wife, and it was cathartic and wonderful, although she gets no credit on the book, I'm telling you, just between
right,
you and
yeah,
me.
Right.
She really, really helped me and was my co-writer. And it was, you know, my wife's a psychologist, and uh-huh. very, very smart, and so she would ask me questions. When you said this and this happened, do you think it was blah, blah, blah? And I go, oh my gosh, you're absolutely right. So we, you know, it was like a great therapy session with my wife, which you should never do. It's you should avoid that, having therapy sessions with your psychologist's wife.
Memoir was, length therapy right. sessions.
Yeah. We had a wonderful time writing it, and and along with my ears bled from the stress. But so now it's all everything's happening all at once. In this week, the Emmys and the Glee coming out in the book and. And actually, I just feel really in a soft cotton place. I feel very happy.
Well, good for you. You deserve it. You worked a long time for it. I'm really struck, Jane, in your memoir, how much focus you give right off the bat to young people. I mean, we see you kicking the kids around on Glee and appearing to take a lot of glee in doing that, almost this sadistic cheerleading
yes.
coach there. But here, you're like bending way over backwards with sort of kindness and good witch, good fairy
yes.
wishes for young people, maybe particularly those with showbiz in mind, saying,
yeah.
don't sweat it so much, chill mm-hmm. out, it'll be all right. But is that really the lesson of your life?
It has been, yes. I think had I undergone what I, that we all have our trials and tribulations in life, but I suffered over them and resisted them and thought there was something wrong with me. And I'm not even talking about the sexual orientation mm-hmm. stuff. I meant mm-hmm. just at my core, I had an extra helping of angst. And I think it's just important for kids to know that you're okay exactly as you are. And of course, I didn't write this just for kids. I mean, it turns
sure.
out that I think it's a really good lesson
on.
For kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's so funny, a happy accident, that Glee is the show that I'm on, because that's exactly the message of Glee. Whoever you are, whatever you feel and who you think you want to be in life, it's welcome in this little Glee club. And not only is it welcome, but you will be celebrated for it. And that is the message of Glee, as it turns out. I don't know that Ryan Murphy set out to mm-hmm. To give that message, but he has really taken a hold of it and taken it as his personal mission to, the kids are really responding to it.
Well, you've got the experience to speak to this, so I wish you'd just tease that out a little more, because I think in many fields, and certainly in showbiz, people often look mm-hmm. at that angst, that kind of, oh my God, there's something wrong with me, or what am I going to do, or I've got to do more, as the fuel mm-hmm. of success.
Yeah, well, I think, it's how you undergo it. One of the things that I did, I think, was right, and it was right for me, is that in spite of my fear and my trepidations, I said yes to everything. I talk about one play that I quit when I was in high school and how I vowed never to do that again. And I said yes to everything. And that was important for me. I'm not saying it works for everybody else. I mean, you have to use your, like I always say, I say yes to everything, but I would not have said yes to porno. You know, you have to use your.
A line
you
somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. You have to draw your own line. But you have to trust yourself to know when that line is. And so I ended up doing a lot of things and a lot of productions that maybe weren't so great. But I always did my best in them. And I was responsible for my own work. And I developed a really good, strong work ethic. And it came out of a love and a passion. And what I did is I followed that love and passion. And I think that's the message I want to get out to is, you know, I was so afraid that the parade would pass me by that I would not be able to do what I wanted to do, which was act and be on stage and eventually in front of a camera. You really can't – not you can't do anything you want to do. I mean, you have to figure out – like I say at the end of the book, mm-hmm. Carol Brady said this in The Brady Bunch. Find what it is you do best – and then do your best with it. I think that's it, right there, that's it in a nutshell for me in my life.
There was a moment when you weren't so sure. You came back home after college and even after graduate school, and were back in with your parents or your mom in the suburb of Chicago and thinking about taking secretarial work, thinking seriously about
it. I did, actually. I took the English test at Arthur Andersen, where my mother worked, because my mom said, you know, get a job here.
Get a career.
I failed.
You failed the English test?
I failed the English test, and I had an MFA.
from Cornell, and couldn't do
my
that.
My mother was so humiliated. I failed the English test. And so I got into a Shakespeare company in Chicago.
Right.
But, I thought that I would have to, you know, start doing something that would crush my soul, and it turns out I didn't have to.
Was there ever another time? Because, you know, your career has been sort of backloaded. Was there any other time in your 30s or beyond where you thought this still might not work? It still might not work.
Rarely. You know, I rarely had those thoughts because I was so much enjoying what I was doing. I hoped that I would break through, whatever that means. And but I felt successful almost the entire time. I had a couple of moments. I remember, and I talk about it in the book, where I was walking up, hiking Fryman Canyon in Los Angeles, and at the bottom of the hill, I said to myself, I got to leave. I've got to leave Los Angeles. This isn't going to happen for me. I was like in my late 30s.
Yep.
Got to the top of the hill, ran into an actor friend of mine, and I said, I'm done. I think I'm leaving. And she said, no, you're not. You know, you've got talent. You have to stick with it. And then by the time I got to the bottom of the hill, I was back in the game.
Jane Lynch, it's so great to have you with us. It really is a treat and something special. Please stand by there in New York. The new memoir is Happy Accidents. It's got a foreword by Carol Burnett. We'll talk about that behind us right here. Well, you know, Jane Lynch as Sue Sylvester with her cover of Madonna's Vogue on Glee. Talk about something fun to do. You can join us. When did you tune in on Jane Lynch? Was it with Glee and her scowly coach, Sue Sylvester? Was it in Best in Show, 40-Year-Old Virgin? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Sue Sylvester. Well, that's the subject right there. Jane Lynch singing, hosting Saturday Night Live. That was October 9th, 2010, just a year ago now. Song from her opening monologue there about Glee, and you can hear what she's celebrating. She's with us this hour on the Emmys Sunday night. Glee's season premiere is tonight, and Jane Lynch has a new memoir out. It's called Happy Accidents. We're talking about it with her this hour. She joins us from New York. I want to ask you about Glee and Sue Sylvester, who was played by you, as we know from Saturday Night Live.
By me, yes, as you just heard.
Where do you get the angry, snarky piece of that? Does that come right out of childhood and family? Did you stumble on that as a routine that worked for you later? Where's that come from?
That, you know, if you read my book, Happy Accidents, that is what I call my inner diva period. When I was in my early 20s and I was in Chicago and I was in the Shakespeare company and fresh out of the graduate program at Cornell, and I fancied myself a classically trained actress with all of the arrogance that goes with that.
Yes.
And I became a really hard person to be around.
They were not up to your standards.
Not up to my standards. I had issues with every aspect of everything, and not only on stage, but with everybody in my life. And I did everything I could to push people away from me. But of course, what I really wanted was people to come toward me. So I understand that affliction that Sue Sylvester has. You know, she's protecting a very tender heart, and it was personified in her sister with Down syndrome, who dies at the end of this last season. But she has protected that, you know, her sister and from the cold, cruel world for many years. And she chose, in order to adapt, she chose to become a warrior. And that's why she wears those tracksuits. You know, that's her armor.
Her armor.
And, yes, her armor. So, you know, that came right from my shadow, right from my own soul. I think any work that's profound to you, you know, acting or any, you know, artistic endeavor that becomes profound for you is something that's deep, deep inside of you, perhaps hiding in the shadows.
I loved reading a little bit about your family and where Jane Lynch came from here. You describe your family as pure Americana, but it's such a wonderful description. This is a suburb, sort of new development, mm-hmm. I guess, on the south of Chicago, and we're talking the 60s and 70s here. Paint that picture for us, what life was like there. And if you would, give us a little about your dad and your mom. They're wonderful characters in themselves.
Mm-hmm. They are. My mom and dad were born and raised in Chicago. They're both Irish Catholic, although my mother is half Swedish. Mm-hmm. And the manifest destiny then was to buy a house in this new burgeoning suburban area south of Chicago. I remember my parents paid $11,000 for that first house in Dalton. And it was a brand new village. It was called the Village of Dalton. We didn't even have a grocery store. We just had a little corner store. And some people didn't have phone service when, you know, we first moved there. And so it was kind of this concrete jungle. It was basically in our neighborhood. It was all young parents with young kids and kids riding their bikes down the street, and you know it was a very suburban. It was a new suburb.
You say a Norman Rockwell painting, except 60s and 70s, so with bell bottoms and a well stocked liquor cabinet.
Mm-hmm. My parents loved their cocktail hour. Their toast was first today, badly needed, and they had the 60s cocktail parties where the neighbors would come over and everybody get loaded. And, you know, that was kind of what they did. That was the culture.
Your dad was a wonderful goofball, James.
He was a goofball. He had songs for everything. He had phrases for everything. Nothing he called what it was called. Like coffee was Cafiticus. if something was over, like a television show would be over, he goes, "Oh, I'm so sad. That's kaputt machen." He just had his own little. That actually is a German word.
Yeah,
he had his own little phrases for everything. Yeah. Yep. He he would misuse them.
Yeah.
And on purpose. He was a smart guy, but he knew what he was doing. He was a really funny guy. He had kind of like Borscht Belt humor and his little songs. I got things to do, places to go, people to see.
Yeah.
Had his little routines. Just even putting on his shoes, I would slap a shoe and tie it, and then slap it again. He was a funny guy.
And your mom was to him LT, long thing, a tall gal like yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, she was a tall drink of water, and he called her LT, long thing. Yeah.
And spaced out.
Everybody had
to describe her as the spacey one in the family.
Yeah, she's kind of, her synapses did not fire like the rest of ours. She got the joke a week later, and she looked confused a lot of the time. And, we got a kick out of that. So she was hilarious in her own way. And the truth would just like fly out of her mouth with no filter at all. You know, she's a very funny woman.
We're going to have a lot of listeners thinking as you're kind of giving advice to coming up here about how you did that. I mean, you described this sort of Irish Catholic or Irish and some Swedish mm-hmm. going on there in Illinois. I would feel fraudulent not to just say, you know, I mean, my dad's folks sailed from Belfast. My mom's Swedish, grew up in Illinois, not far from where you went to college, a farm in outside of Bloomington Normal. You're describing being at ISU here, playing in Lysistrata. For all I know, I saw that years ago with you and Jim Farrell. But what was that like? You were there. I know that territory. This was not Haight-Ashbury. This was not San Francisco. What was it like finding your own gay self? Yeah, in that.
Oh my goodness, there was one gay bar in town, but I don't think I ever went to it. I was completely closeted. I was in Normal. That was the name of the town. Mm-hmm. Was Normal. And that's my mom's highest aspirations for all three of her children were for that they would be normal. So when I found out, you know, that deep dark secret that I was gay, I was like, oh no. But Normal was a very normal place to be. It was cornfields. It used to be a teaching college. It was a very staid environment and lots of drinking, a lot of partying. You know, and
you found your first sort of steps to acknowledging or embracing mm-hmm. your sexuality there, though.
Yeah, I had an affair with a teacher there. Oh, my goodness. Scandal. Yeah, the happy accident of going to school in Normal, Illinois, was that it happened to have one of the best theater programs maybe in the country. The Steppenwolf People, which is a wonderful theater in Chicago. A lot of the original members went through Illinois State. The faculty
Laurie Metcalf,
was revered.
John Malkovich.
Laurie Metcalf, Terry Kinney, mm-hmm. Tom Irwin. If you're a theater actor, you know these people. Mm-hmm. And the teachers were all revered and feared and were nationally known and, protégés of like Uta Hagen and the original Methody people. And, you know, it was a really, really good program. And I found my way to the theater program after starting out as a mass comm major because my mom said, you know, don't major in theater. Major in something where you can actually get a job. So I was kind of theater adjacent. But I ended up changing my major secretly by the second semester of my freshman year in theater. And so that ended up being a wonderful experience. I got great training there and was in some really good productions, Lysistrata being one of them. Mm-hmm. In fact, my inspiration for Sue Sylvester, this was completely unconsciously at the time, but we had a teacher at Illinois State who we referred to as the Dragon Lady, who was very much like, you know, she was very shaming and humiliating, but had underneath all of her layers of shawls, she wore lots of layers, was a very tender heart. And I think that I probably drew from that experience, of course, and within myself to create this Sue Sylvester gal.
Mm, you take your lessons where you find them. Jane Lynch is
you
with
sure
us.
Do.
Yep. Emmy and Golden Globe Award-winning actress. You saw her on the Emmys Sunday night. Her new memoir is Happy Accidents. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. She joins us today from New York. And, Jane, there are a lot of listeners lined up to talk with you. I want to talk about when you called into a radio show years ago. It mattered. Yeah. But let's get to them first. Kelly in Nashville, Tennessee. You're on the air with Jane Lynch. Kelly.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Tom. Jane, I just want to say, first of all, I absolutely love you. And my favorite role that I've seen you in, I don't think Tom has mentioned, and that was your role in Julie and Julia. I loved that film, and you were fabulous in it. I also just wanted to say that my favorite line in the Emmys was when you said you were often asked why you were a lesbian, and then you immediately introduced the cast of Entourage. I almost fell out of my chair, and I hope you didn't get too much grief for that because I thought it was fabulous.
No, so all that stuff is in good fun.
We will pick both those up, maybe first with the Entourage Emmy moment. Here it was, just as Kelly describes, Jane Lynch delivering a deadpan one-liner as host of the Emmy Awards Sunday night.
A lot of people are very curious why I'm a lesbian. Ladies and gentlemen, the cast of Entourage.
Okay, what are you playing with exactly right there? There's some cuties in that cast, but some real boorish guys too. That's what they play. But
it's boys being boys behaving badly.
Yeah. And you laid it right into them. What about Julia and
Julia.
Yes, you played Julia Childs' sister, Meryl Streep, right. Playing, of course, Julia Childs there. Kelly loves it in Nashville. You know, that was one of those moments where you're a tall woman, and Julia Childs was a tall woman. It was famously part of her persona. You brought it straight to the screen. You had exactly the biology there to run with that.
It was funny. Nora Ephron, who wrote and directed this, I had met her at the Mighty Wind premiere, actually. And she got a hold of me and said, you're the tallest actress I know. Would you be interested in playing this part? She said, you know, it's a small part and, you know, you'll get a trip to Paris out of it. Mm. And she acted like she was insulting me, you know, to be offering me a part
Meryl
to play playing Meryl Streep's sister. And I didn't get that trip to Paris because it turns out the train station, which was what we were trying to find, was a Parisian train station. That type of train station doesn't exist in Paris anymore. It's full of Coca-Cola signs.
So
but
promises,
there is one in
promises.
Hoboken, New Jersey.
Great.
Yeah, right. So I went to Hoboken instead.
Well, I wonder, though, how how that just physical scale that you bring to the stage, how you've handled that in your life. Is it, you know, how it's factored into the career that you've developed, Jane?
Well, I'm a character actor, so I don't, you know, I have not noticed that one way or the other it has affected me. It could be a plus. I mean, I've you know, heard directors say to me, you know, what's really great is that you're just so much taller than our lead guy, and then that's funny. Mm. So if I think if I were a more of an ingenue, it might be more of an issue.
Have you ever, wished against it in the night so you could be that ingenue? I mean, you've done it anyway.
No, yeah? Not at
all.
You've
been Madonna singing Vogue.
No, but then, I see, I don't have that, I don't have that person in me. I don't have that kind mm-hmm. of, like, sexual confidence, if you will. Although I do play people who are overly sexually confident. I don't have that, in the innards for the ingenue parts. I have the innards for the characters, parts.
We saw that imposing sexual person a little bit in 40-year-old version. Pocatello, Idaho, on the line, and Candace is calling. Hi, Candace, you're on with Jane Lynch.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Hey, I was first introduced to Jane Lynch through A Mighty Wind and shortly thereafter Best in Show, and have been a huge fan ever since. And I can also relate to that extra helping of angst growing up with from the rest of my life. I had a question about a scene that was in Glee about when Kurt was being bullied over being gay, and there was a meeting between Kurt and his parents and the bully and his father.
Right.
And the emotion that you showed, Ms. Lynch, seemed very genuine and not acting. And with all of your wonderful advocacy that you do, I was just kind of wondering how that experience was for you in that scene.
What I loved about doing that scene is that what you saw was the Sue Sylvester using her power for good. She is a warrior, and for a short time she was the principal of that school. And she really related to the what Chris was going through, Kurt was going through, and she decided to be his champion. And though Sue Sylvester is a bully, she recognized in that moment, and she says it to both sets of parents, you know, I understand bullying because I am one, and I come from a long line mm-hmm. of bulliers, and it comes from a sense of insecurity within me. And she copped to it and said that as long as she is in that school, that kid is safe, that she will protect him. And, yeah, I love that. I love that. You know, Ryan Murphy came up to me and said, you know, after this scene, you've bought yourself 7 more episodes of heinous behavior.
though, catch her on a different episode and you might hear something different. Candace, Jane, let me play this one. This is from season 1. And Sue Sylvester, Jane Lynch's character, is hired to deliver commentary on the local news channel. Here's an excerpt from one of her Sue's Corners, a rant about the gay community.
I got a bee in my bun at Western Ohio. You know what I've had it up to here with? Sneaky gays. Gone are the days of Oscar Wilde, Liberace, homosexuals so flaming they could be seen from space. Why, nowadays, sneaky gays are everywhere. At the church, at the mall, picking up their meticulously dressed, fastidious children from daycare. We should be able to see a gay coming a mile away. Because if I can't tell who's gay, how will I know who to judge? And that's how Sue sees it.
How will she know who to judge? Oh, boy. Is Sue's going to run for Congress this year? Is that on Glee?
She is.
As what kind of congresswoman then? Is she a Tea Partier?
Well, she's kind of going that route right now, but it's funny. I'm sure something will happen where she will want to defend the rights of someone vulnerable, because that's where the best in her comes out. So I just have a feeling that'll happen. But right now she's anti-arts. Basically she's running on the platform that arts are killing everything, and that it's why we're falling behind in math and science, and that if we really want to please our future Chinese overlords, we will learn our math and science.
Get ready for the mm-hmm. for the new regime.
Mm-hmm.
Are you feeling boxed in by Glee yet? It's the biggest, longest role out there for you.
It is. Yeah, and it's great. I love going to work every day. I'm sad when I'm not in an episode. Every once in a while, they put me on the bench, and It's sad for me when I don't see my name on the call sheet. I love going to work every day, and I go to that beautiful Paramount Studios, and I get to drive through those gates, and it's pretty nice.
She's arrived. Jane Lynch is with us. Her new memoir is Happy Accidents. Jane, we've got a lot of people who want to talk with you. We'll come to them right after a short break here. Here's Jane in From A Mighty Wind, Christopher Guest film with Jane Lynch as a member of the new Main Street Singers. You can join the conversation this hour. Does Jane Lynch take you back to your high school gym teacher in Glee? Does she thrill you, scare you, delight you? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Never did no wondering after all.
Easy now.
Never did no wondering.
Never did no wondering. Never did no wondering after all.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Jane Lynch right there in a duet with Carol Burnett with Ohio from the 1953 Ohio, musical Wonderful Town. They play a mother-daughter pair on the hit TV show Glee. Jane Lynch joins us this hour out with a new memoir. It's called Happy Accidents, about her life in show business before and beyond. She joins us from New York. What is it with you and Carol Burnett, Jane?
Well, Carol Burnett is a huge hero of mine. I grew up watching the Carol Burnett Show. I wanted to be on it. You know, Vicki Lawrence got on the show by writing her a letter, and so I wrote a letter to Vicki Lawrence. be hooked up with her, you know, how many years later? 40 years later. Mm-hmm. Is a pretty amazing thing. She plays my mother on Glee. We actually met in a movie called Postgrad about 3 years ago. And she's exactly who you would hope she would be. Wonderful, open-hearted, gracious, hilarious, ready to tell a story. I didn't even have to cue her up after a while. She would just turn to me and, you know, once Tim Conway, and she would tell me these terrific stories. Yeah. And I adore her and very moved and touched that she wrote that beautiful foreword for the book.
It must be amazing, all those years after having idolized her, and you were a very active idolizer. I mean, you've got this story in the book about calling in to a Chicago talk radio show. Ron Howard and Anson Williams were on there.
He was Ronnie Howard back then.
Ronnie Howard, right? Almost Mayberry Boy. And you talked with them on the radio about how to get into showbiz. What did they tell you?
Yeah. Well, he told me, I said, you know, I'm in Guys and Dolls now. So I was in seventh grade. And he said, you know, why don't you go through school? And then when you get out of college, you can decide and do plays in school. You can decide if you want to go to Los Angeles or New York, but stay in school, basically. And then Anson Williams told me a very practical advice. He said, go downtown to Chicago and the Screen Actors Guild and get yourself a list of agents and start writing them, which, you know, is kind of a silly thing to tell a 12-year-old girl who lives in the suburbs.
But you did.
But I did it. I did it. I guess so. I wrote all of these people, and I also wrote casting agents. And I sent a letter to the Universal Studios, because we had just visited Universal Studios on a family vacation.
Yeah.
And I sent it to casting, just generally. And it got into some woman's office, and her assistant wrote me back a terrible letter telling me, crushing
October
my dream.
October 7th, 1974. Dear Ms. Lynch, they're using Ms. already in 1974.
Says, yes, I guess.
Even though you feel you have the ability and a natural talent for acting, professional training is a requirement in our search for talent. She just smacked you right down.
You think Ray Romano has training?
Right,
he's
right.
Good.
Hello.
But it's pretty funny, professional training. But, you know, it's a terrible letter. And like I say in the book, any sane teenager would have been crushed by it. But I took it. I was just so thrilled to get a reply. And it was on Universal letterhead. I was tickled pink by the whole thing.
I want to ask you a little about Charlie Sheen. He was there on the Emmys the other night, very, very sober and straightforward in his comments there.
Yeah.
You played his therapist for a while on Two and a Half Men.
That
must have been wild. Did you have any idea what a powder keg you had in your
no.
theatric care?
He's a great guy, and he's really he went through something. He, you know, addiction is a horrible thing. And but he's a terrific person, and I like him very much. I worked with him, I think, for over 5 years, doing that role, and I count him a friend. He's a really good guy, and he's doing really well. And I thought he was just very classy on the Emmys the other night. I thought he did great. And I can't wait to watch the roast. I cannot wait to watch the roast, which I think
Comedy
airs
Central
tonight.
Or somewhere coming up.
Yeah.
Here's a scene from the season 6 of Two and a Half Men where Jane Lynch is playing Sheen's therapist, aired back in 2009.
How did that make you feel?
No more feelings. You tried it your way. Now just take out your little prescription pad and start scribbling.
You don't need medication, Charlie. You're actually making tremendous progress.
Are you not listening to a thing I say?
I drift in and out.
Jane Lynch with Charlie Sheen as his therapist in Two and a Half Men there. Charlottesville, Virginia, Caroline is calling. Hi, Caroline, you're on the air with Jane Lynch.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Jane, I live in Charlottesville, Virginia, and I just recently married my partner in April. And I'm an artist, and so healthcare is always something I try to keep hold of. And so I've worked many jobs that I can't stand because I can't be covered through my partner. And I guess my question is where you see the gay movement going in this country and how you see us gaining a little more footing.
Well, I think it's inevitable. And, you know, I don't know. But today's a big day. Don't ask, don't tell is gone.
Right. As of today from the U.S. military.
As of today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's a terrific thing. And, you know, I don't have any predictions for when, but just that it's inevitable. It's completely inevitable. And, you know, I think it's there are states that are going to be slower than others, and I bet Virginia is going to be one of them. Sorry to say. But it's on its way. I wish I had I could say when, and I wish it would be very soon, but I don't know that.
Is it a factor in your career now, positive, negative, neutral? Has the show business world changed enough that it's a neutral thing, or how do you look at it?
Everybody's gay in show business, my friend.
Yeah,
it's teaming with gays.
But they haven't always been public by any means, right?
Right.
There was a lot of closet for a long time.
No. But there's, you know, we don't care in Hollywood. I think that what Hollywood cares about, of course, is the bottom line when it comes down to it. And your lead actors, your Tom Cruises and your Brad Pitts, and I'm talking my generation. Who are the new ones? Michelle Williams, Ryan Gosling.
Right.
We want them straight because America still can't project their hopes and dreams for love on someone who they know is gay. And most, you know, I think that most straight actors, ingenues are going to remain to need to be straight. But, you know, on Broadway, it doesn't matter. And so I think that it's just a matter of time there, too. But there, you know, in terms of relationships with people in Hollywood, it doesn't matter. It's a very liberal place.
You mentioned your wife who helped you write the memoir, Laura Embry. Tell us about how you met. And as with our caller, you guys also married, two years ago now?
A year and some months ago, in Massachusetts. Yes, I met Laura at a fundraiser for an organization called NCLR, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, and they had represented Laura in a case, and she did some great work for them, and she was being honored at this organization's gala, and I was there to give an award to Eileen Chaykin, the creator of the L Word, and so we met at the photo session just before the gala, the dinner, and it was pretty immediate for both of us. And we spent the night, googly-eyed at each other. And she went back to Florida, and I went back to L.A. But we were on the phone on the planes on the way back, saying when do we see each other again? And we been together now for 2.5 years.
Great story, Rosie in Columbia, South Carolina. Rosie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Love the show.
Thanks,
Jane. I admire your work. I love the way that you can play a comedic role in Two and a Half Men and Best in Show. I love you on Glee and on Criminal Minds. I'm just interested in knowing how do you prepare for such versatility in your roles, because you can go from a comedic actress to one that can find their the inner, deeper part of themselves in a role where you play Spencer Reed's mom on Criminal Minds. Do you have any special preparation, especially when more actors today, to me, seem to be more one-dimensional?
I always go start the same way. I start emotionally, and I go to something emotionally honest, whether I'm doing a comedy or, you know, Spencer's mom on Criminal Minds, where I play a woman with schizophrenia. You go to, you know, of course, I had to research that, you know, that mental illness. But you go to some place emotionally honest, and from that, all good things flow. And so it's exactly the same for me. Now, the world of a sitcom is different than the world of Criminal Minds, and the world of Glee is different than the world of, say, a Julie Julia. So, you know, there are certain parameters, but I always start from the emotionally honest place.
Is that the work of a few minutes to turn and pivot to that? Or is that a work of days, weeks, months?
That's like? Pretty much an immediate thing. You know, you just tap into something. I go, oh, this feels right. You look at the given circumstances of the character, and then I go, okay, what if, you know, you ask the question, what if? What if I were this person in this circumstance? Does it make me feel vulnerable? Where am I afraid? I look at the Achilles heel of the person first. And then work from there. And I mean, I play a lot of confident, arrogant people, but everybody has. And I think the reason that I haven't been accused of being one-dimensional is that I start emotionally honest, even with my most confident people.
And they can be like over the moon, off the hook, honest, mm-hmm. or call it what you will. Forward. Here's Jane Lynch playing Paula in the 40-year-old version, the boss of Steve Carell's character, Andy the Virgin. One day at work, she shares the story of how she deflowered a middle-aged gardener at the age of 14.
You know, Javier, before he made passionate yet gentle love to me for the first time, he serenaded me with a beautiful old Guatemalan love song.
Really? That sounds nice.
Cuando reglan mi cuarto, no encuentro nada.
I was just agog with happiness at that moment. I don't know who deflowered who there, but that was a wonderful bit. Jack in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Jane Lynch.
Hi, Tom. Love your show.
Thank you.
I'm the co-creator and writer of Word Girl, a cartoon on PBS. And
Word Girl. Okay.
I did an episode of Word Girl.
That's right. You did a four-part movie special for Word Girl, and I actually wrote that script. And
Great! It was great fun. It was great fun.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, you know, when we created a character called Miss Power, who's an intergalactic bully that Word Girl has to take on, and we needed someone funny and charismatic, but also intimidating. And so we went through a bunch of names, and then our producer Danielle said, "What about Jane Lynch?" And everybody said, "Yes, of course, of course," because you just have universal appeal with the mainstream and comedy snobs. So everybody was completely on board. And I think you were feeling ill the day that you came in to do that.
I had almost had no voice. Yeah, I was coming off of laryngitis. Oh, and I totally remember that. I hope it did not affect your thing.
It didn't matter. I mean, you really just nailed the part, and we're animating it now, and it's just amazing. Just your character infused in that role is just fantastic. And, you know, so professional. Even though you weren't feeling well and you were super busy, you were so professional and just such a joy to work with.
Oh, good, because I felt like kind of a you-know-what. I felt like I was kind of cranky.
I'm
glad to hear you say that.
Not at all, no. Everybody walked away, our voice director, walked away saying, like, man, she is just such a professional, so cool to work with. And he was just really excited to work with you as well.
Good.
But I actually have a question for you, being a bit of a comedy star myself. I mean, you stole scenes in 40-Year-Old Virgin. I mean, that scene that we just heard was mm-hmm. just incredible. And, you know, doing the movies with Christopher Guest and working so improv-heavy in those troops, what was that like? I mean, how did you prepare for that? Was it a challenge? Were you intimidated? I mean, because you really did steal scenes in those movies.
Oh, thank you. Well, that was really a great movie to be on, The 40-Year-Old Virgin. We did we improvised everything. I mean, we had kind of a skeleton of a script. We improvised everything, and Judd Apatow, who directed, it was his first movie too, his first directing job. He called us when we were shooting in that Smart Tech store. He called us all in every day, even if we weren't listed as being in the scenes. And he would, like, it was like being on a basketball team. He would call you off the bench. He'd be like, Paul, get in there, or Jane, get in there. And so it was that, it was sitting around, you know, waiting to see if he was going to call us in for something that I came up with, the Guatemalan love song. And, you know, I got a lot of kind of creative work done sitting there. And it was such a great creative atmosphere too. It was very spontaneous, and we shot a lot of film. And you know, there's an art to good reacting, too. And nobody's better than Steve Carell, except maybe Paul Rudd, who is also a terrific reactor. It's a great skill as well.
Jack, thanks for your call. Lots of response and comments online here. Jane Annie says, can't express how much she adores your energy and spirit. Beautiful, brave, engaging, hilarious. Rob says, your beer blowing out the nose, funny, and Party Down, on and on. But here's one. Barrett says that, you know, is worried about what's happening with American humor and entertainment. He says, is Jane Lynch not just kind of a female Ricky Gervais? There's an edge at times. It's just
mean-spirited.
Well, he's saying he's...
I should be so lucky as
you
to
should be
female
so lucky,
Ricky
but
Gervais.
But Barrett doesn't see... He says there's a mean-spirited quality, nastiness of the culture, and he's concerned not just that it's nasty, but it leaves a kind of a limited aesthetic choice, he writes here.
It can. You know what? It depends. Comedy is so personal. And the thing about comedy is that you as you're engaged in it, you can't judge it. You have to just... You know, it's about taking chances. And sometimes I know I push too far, and I'll have to come back. Like in a take, some Sue Sylvester, what I love about doing Sue Sylvester is I can growl and throw furniture and just go so far. But there are times where the director will be like, let's make it more seething than just explosive like that. Don't be so mean here. I mean, it's an art. You have to be able to, it needs to be nuanced. And sometimes, it gets, you know, sometimes the ethos, it is mean and snarky. I think the great artistry is when you can take that mean, snarky energy and make it, you know, so that it's not just mean and snarky for its sake. But it's totally personal, and maybe for this guy it's gotten too mean, and I completely understand that. I find Ricky Gervais to be one of the funniest self-deprecating people out there, and I loved his Golden Globe emceeing. I thought he was great.
You got banished to London for the Emmys, but you loved it
I
there.
I know. That was so funny.
We just got to have a minute. Do you still feel free professionally? You know, everything you do, it's great, but then it can set a track. Do you still feel like you've got sort of the whole range of options ahead of you in terms of the kind of characters you'll represent?
I do. You know, I don't know if the audience would feel that way, but I do feel that way. Well, Alec Baldwin came up to me and said, you know, everything you do now, people will laugh at whether it's funny or not, and that's the good news and the bad news.
The good news and the bad news. There's been plenty of good news lately. Jane Lynch's new memoir is Happy Accidents, with a foreword by Carol Burnett. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. And Jane, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
For you. Especially nice to have you with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jane,
you bet. Thank you.
Thank you. Jane Lynch joining us there from New York. Listeners, thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.